Hello, I'm Rohit Shukla, founder and CEO of LARTA.
This is LARTA Institute's podcast series, Ideas Energized, which shines a spotlight on entrepreneurs in the hard sciences with whom we have worked.
Our world has seen an increase in the frequency and ubiquity of problems and issues that mark our time. Exotic new and recurring pandemics, heightened deforestation, increasing global warming are just a few of the areas of concern. Yet our pursuit of scientific research and inquiry is also increasingly becoming multidisciplinary, spanning across hitherto siloed disciplines. So, for example, the development of new insights and solutions in healthcare owes much to insights from the world of data science, of materials, and others. Our developments in global warming owe as much to agricultural biology and entomology as they do to such energy-intensive areas as fossil fuels. As problems in the world get more complex, we need to identify those areas where the convergence of research and development in and from many disciplines can yield new solutions and new approaches to the management of disease, the management of finite resources, and the production of food. I am privileged to lead an organization whose mission is to uncover technologies and solutions that feed, fuel, and heal the world. At LARTA, we work to identify and focus on convergent technologies and solutions. Today on our podcast, we are showcasing companies and technologies with whom we have worked that switch the trend. Their technologies converge at the nexus of feeding, fueling, and healing the world by being proactive instead of reactive. Let's welcome our guests, Ed Rogers of Bonumose, Salem Boucher of Radiobeam, and Karen Sorber of Micronic Technologies. I will also be joined in this interview by the directors of our various practices, Claire Kinlaw, director of our ag practice, David Berikoff, director of our energy practice, and Judy Shea, director of our life sciences practice.
Bonumose BioChem developed a novel enzymatic platform technology to produce healthy and affordable rare sugars. Bonumose participated in the 2017 Ag Innovation Showcase at UC Davis and in fact won the People's Choice Award, which won them a ticket to the 2017 Ag Innovation Showcase later that year in St. Louis.
Bonumose has four main objectives as a company. The first one is producing food ingredients people love to eat. They also aim to help alleviate suffering from global epidemics of diabetes, obesity, tooth decay, and other health issues without asking consumers to sacrifice their taste or their pocketbook. Third, they aim to hire individuals in positions of productive labor, thereby enabling them to feed themselves and their families through the dignity of meaningful, productive work. And finally, as any company should, they aim to create wealth for the owners, customers, employees, suppliers, and other business partners.
Hi, I'm Judy Shea, Program Director, Life Sciences Practice at LARTA.
Hello. I'm Claire Kinlaw, Director of the Ag Practice here at LARTA. Today we have Ed Rogers, CEO and co-founder of Bonumose with us. I've had the great pleasure of working with Ed and Bonumose at our Ag Innovation Showcases in Davis and then in St. Louis in 2017.
Welcome, Ed. We're looking for your thoughts on what is specifically innovative about your approach. Why did you choose a more diverse technology and product offering?
Sure. Well, Rohit, thank you for your interest and certainly glad to talk to you again. I'm not sure I could say why we chose this technology. It's almost in a way that technology chose us. Dr. Dan Wichilecki, who is my co-founder and the chief scientific officer of Bonumose, had an epiphany one day about how to make tagatose from low-cost plant-based feedstocks in a highly efficient, high-yield process, which would allow for the cost of tagatose to be reduced dramatically compared to the traditional ways of making it. So we did not invent tagatose, but it's been very expensive. What we did do is after Dr. Wichilecki determined the method for making tagatose at low cost, we then realized we could extend that, change some of the enzymes, and make additional very interesting rare monosaccharides at low cost. And so the other main one that we're working on is allulose, which has a lot of attractive health and physical properties as well.
So tagatose has already been on the market for quite some time. The differentiator here for you at Bonumose is that you've actually figured out a method of making it cheaper, and you've changed a few of the ingredients to make it effectively more scalable. Is that correct?
Yes, basically. Tagatose has been around for 20 or 30 years. Of course, actually, it's been around for a lot longer. It's part of nature. It's found in some fruits and some vegetables. It's found in the tree that produces the cacao bean, but in very, very tiny quantities. So it's a monosaccharide called a rare sugar. It first became available commercially through a process of converting lactose from dairy into tagatose, which was a multi-step process, and it's still pretty much the one used today. But lactose is a disaccharide composed of glucose and galactose. That has to be split. The glucose, you have to get rid of that. The galactose can be changed by an enzyme into tagatose, but the yields are very low. The overall yields are maybe 20% from the starting lactose. What Dr. Wichilecki's invention permits is the conversion of commodity starch from plants using a unique blend of enzymes to get extremely high yields, 90% or higher, of tagatose, and also eliminating an expensive downstream processing step called simulated moving bed chromatography. So we have a lower cost feedstock, which is available abundantly. We have super high yields, and then we have a less expensive processing steps, and it results in a much, much lower cost structure, and we believe will allow us to achieve 80% lower cost.
So, Ed, where do you see the convergence of food ingredients and health moving forward?
Well, Judy, in our case, what's really interesting about tagatose and allulose is that there's no sacrifice of taste or functionality in food. So it's not like asking consumers to give up sugar for something that tastes weird or doesn't work fully in foods. Another thing consumers are asked to give up is money. So the cost of other alternatives is very high. In our case, we offer the fantastic taste and functional benefits of tagatose and allulose at an affordable price. And then what's really interesting about these ingredients, they're not only not bad for you, they actually impart positive health benefits to people who eat them. They do not raise blood sugar levels, they actually reduce blood sugar levels. They're low calorie. They are not only not bad for teeth, they actually are good for teeth. Tagatose has been proven to break up dental biofilm, so it's a positive benefit. It could be used in toothpaste, mouthwash. And then tagatose also is a prebiotic, so it is good for gut health, and it's like fiber. So these are great tasting functional sweeteners that are not going to harm health, but actually going to help health. And we think that that's the type of ingredient that people probably will be demanding in their foods.
Just comment on specifically how you're trying to establish the product in the marketplace.
Sure, Rohit. We do think that there will be high demand for this. So in terms of our strategy and how we're thinking about growth, we're not interested in just licensing out the technology, but we also believe in the importance of partnerships. So we will be entering into partnerships on the manufacturing side with strategic suppliers of starch. It will be starch that is a byproduct or a waste product of some other process that we can get at low cost and then increase the value thereof. In addition, we have strategic investors behind us. They came into the company in late last year and have been providing a lot of value to us. And indirectly, it was because of our relationship with LARDA. The other thing that we're doing is on the sales side, in order to capture the market opportunity, we believe that we need to partner with experienced food ingredient producers and marketers. And so we are entering into exclusive sales and distribution agreements with different companies in different parts of the world. And the first one with one of the major sugar producers in the country. And we're really excited about what that company is going to be able to do to get our product to its customers. And it's very excited about what it's going to be able to offer to its customers.
Hi, Ed. Expand a little bit more on where Bonimos is heading in the future. Maybe talk a little bit about what you see in the 5 to 10 year horizon.
Sure. So we think right now, based upon the portfolio of monosaccharides that we have developed, that tagatose and allulose will be the big sellers. The reason is because people really like sweet stuff and we don't see them giving up sweet stuff. We see the volume being enormous. I mean, well over 1 million metric tons a year. There's another one that we're working on called allose, which nobody can make now except from allulose, which is itself very expensive. But we have a method of just adding one more enzyme to our pathway, and we can make allose in extremely high yields. And that's going to be a really interesting new sugar that nobody else has, not at any price, except for maybe Sigma Aldrich or some of the lab supply companies at, you know, $1,000 a gram. It has almost no calories, almost no glycemic index, basically a 1 on the glycemic index compared to sucrose, which is 68. Sweetness is somewhere between allulose and tagatose. So tagatose is like about 90% as sweet as sucrose. Allulose is about 70. Allulose is somewhere there in the middle. But we think that's going to be another interesting one in addition to tagatose and allulose.
Let's talk about the markets, I think, for our audience, Ed.
The largest market we see is going to be food and beverage. And in that market, it will be B2B sales. So most of the sales will go to food and beverage manufacturers. But there's also interesting opportunities with animal health. Tagatose, as a prebiotic, as something that's like fiber, it helps animal gut health as well. A lot of the tests on tagatose were done in pigs, and it showed the increased production of short-chain fatty acids and other beneficial things in the gut. So we think that there's some opportunities to integrate tagatose into animal feed. Now, allulose could have some benefits in that it has been shown by some Japanese researchers to have beneficial effects against parasitic nematodes. So nematodes that enter into either livestock or companion animals or humans and are parasitic to the host. And allulose, for some reason, has the ability to kill these things while providing sweetness and happiness to the consumer. So both allulose and tagatose, as well as some of the other monosaccharides we're working on, have been demonstrated, again, primarily by Japanese researchers, to have benefits for the soil microbiome. So the microbiome that is beneficial to plants, either as a foliar spray, so spray on the leaves or on the roots, or on the seeds. And what we think is happening is that they feed the good bugs in the soil and they crowd out the bad bugs and therefore help reverse and prevent plant disease.
Ed, let me pick up on those three markets that you identified. We understand in food and beverage you've already got some strong partnerships. What about those other two markets, animal health and plant health?
It's important to have, as an entrepreneur, to have vision, but also focus. So, you know, it's important to have focus, but you can't just focus. You also have to see what the other opportunities are. So we're focused on food and beverage, but we do see opportunities primarily primarily in plant health, but also in animal health. And so we've had some discussions with some of the big players and medium-sized players. It's just been fairly superficial, and it has not been something that I have been able to devote a lot of time to, and all of our financial resources of the company we're putting into the food and beverage space now. If we were focused only on, let's say, plant health, we might actually have some partnerships now. But given that we are not, and given that all of the work in the food and beverage space, you know, it does take up a lot of time. We haven't gotten as far in the other areas as, you know, I think we can eventually.
Could you share a little bit with us how Ag Showcase may have helped you in your vision and or your focus?
Sure. So many of the, let's say, usual suspects for plant health and animal health were at the Ag Showcase in St. Louis. And so we had several discussions there. But again, we were focused on food primarily. And another thing about the assistance of the Ag Innovation Showcase in St. Louis was that an investor in our Series A round was in attendance, a company called iSelect Fund, a small VC fund based in St. Louis. I mentioned earlier about how LARDA was indirectly responsible for our Series A strategic investment. And what happened was that from the Food and Ag Innovation Showcase at UC Davis, I met somebody who worked for the Plug and Play Technology Accelerator, Sunnyvale, Tulsi Patel, and she approached me at some point during the conference and told me about Plug and Play. And that directly led to investments from two strategic investors that are also involved in that. So indirectly, LARDA played a very big role in our Series A, which is helping launch us into commercialization.
That's great. Thank you, Ed. In fact, in this year's 2018's Ag Innovation Showcase, we're going to span the arc now from inputs in plant nutrition and plant health all the way to food itself. We're extremely interested, obviously, in being able to curate and present solutions that target consumer demand for fresh and good and healthy and nutritious food. So this is really very, not just topical, it's very important and central to our own understanding and our own interest in this area. So thank you so much for your insight and your willingness to share with us your thoughts as you move forward into a broad set of markets. Thank you very much indeed. Appreciate it.
Thank you for being one of the important groups that brings together stakeholders in this whole effort. It's really important to get different companies and people together and have them in the same room and be talking to one another. So thank you for your role.
Thank you, Ed. So where can we find your company? Can you share with us a website, social media?
The website is bonomos.com. That's, by the way, is a combination of bonum and os. Bonum is the Latin word for good, and os is the recognized suffix for sugar.
Thank you again, and thank you, Ed, and thank you to my colleagues, Claire Kinlaw and Judy Shea. This is Rohit Shukla.
RadioBeam is an industry-leading developer and provider of innovative particle accelerator components, diagnostics, and turnkey systems for various applications in the field of high-energy physics and medical devices. Currently, RadioBeam is participating in our DOE CAP program. My name is David Barakoff, Director of LARDA's inaugural energy practice, and I'm joined by Judy Shea.
Thank you, David. I'm Judy Shea. We are currently on the line with Salem Boucher of RadioBeam. They have developed a more robust and compact accelerator system for medical applications, such as cancer treatments.
Welcome, Salem. Can you please describe this technology and application in layman's terms?
Sure, David. So whenever you hear about somebody going to get radiation therapy, that is usually delivered with a linear accelerator. It's a device that accelerates electrons to high energies and then converts them to X-rays. The X-rays deposit ionizing radiation in the body, and that radiation is tailored to produce a high dose in the area of the tumor, which kills the tumor cells, while minimizing the dose to the healthy tissue. The particular accelerator that we're developing is a new technique that allows introducing the radiation into the body from many directions around the patient. Current technology is limited to radiating from a single arc around the patient. Our device opens up the space all around the patient. We call it 4-pi radiation therapy because it can deliver radiation from a 4-pi solid angle around the patient. One can imagine that being able to deliver radiation from more angles allows us to better optimize the dose distribution to deliver more dose to the tumor while less dose to the healthy tissue.
Could you please also explain how you got your start with DOE and what caused you to pivot with the technology for the medical sector?
Sure. Well, I can start from my first start in the accelerator field, actually. I was a student at UCLA and was interested in physics and wanted to get some hands-on experience. And I decided to volunteer for pretty much anybody that would take me to work in a lab. The first person that responded was Professor James Rosenzweig, the director of the Particle Beam Physics Lab at UCLA. So I agreed to work for him. And, 20 years later, I'm still working in the accelerator field. But at that time, I really fell in love with the concept of accelerators. It's something very interesting and sort of sexy about a beam of high-energy particles all traveling in one direction and then being used for some application. So that was in my undergraduate education. After that, I went to work for a food irradiation company where we used accelerators. We actually manufactured accelerators to irradiate food. So after the food irradiation company, I realized that there were many applications of accelerators in the real world, something that I hadn't realized when I was a student. So after that, I decided to start a company that focused on developing new accelerator technologies that could also have interesting commercial applications. And obviously, one of the most important applications for accelerators is in treating cancer and radiation therapy. So it has always been on our radar, the potential to develop a new accelerator with applications in the medical field. Around 2013, I met a medical physicist at UCLA that had invented this new technology called 4-pi radiation therapy. And he needed a new accelerator to be designed for his application. Because the accelerator treats the patient from so many angles around the body, the accelerator needs to be as small as possible in order to access all those angles. I started working with Key in 2013. We received first an NIH SBIR grant in around 2015, and we currently are in phase two on that project. We've developed the compact X-band linear accelerator and tested it successfully, and we're currently working on integrating it with the robot motion platform that allows accelerator to reach all the angles around the patient.
In terms of your approach to the medical field, you're now using additional technologies developed, say, for example, for robotics to be able to deliver the particle beam to the patient by using a robot. Is that correct? Just to be able to clarify.
Correct. Yeah, there's been a lot of improvements in robot technology. I do want to clarify that there is one other linear accelerator that uses a robotic platform right now on the market. It's the CyberKnife by Accuray. However, that LINAC was developed for essentially brain treatments, and it's not very well optimized for treating tumors throughout the body. The treatments for that machine are very slow. They aren't able to, it takes about 45 minutes to treat a patient. So our system is designed to be able to treat a wide variety of tumors all around the body. Very quickly and efficiently. I think the biggest advantage in this new technology is not just the hardware, but the software. Our collaborator at UCLA, Professor Ki Sheng, developed a mathematical algorithm to optimize the treatment plan in this very expansive space. Previously, it would have been a very computationally intense problem, but with both his improved algorithm and advances in computing power, we're able to pretty quickly come up with a treatment plan that selects from hundreds of thousands of angles around the patient.
So I would like to ask about any recent successes or developments. Can you share any good things on the horizon?
Just as an indication of the power of radiation therapy, I'd like to talk about some work that our collaborator has done. He already started a phase one trial at UCLA using a hacked LINAC to be able to deliver these 4-pi treatments. He was able to treat a cohort of patients, I believe 9 of them, that previously would not have been able to receive any treatment and would have been turned away. These are recurrent glioblastoma multiforme patients. GBM, glioblastoma multiforme, is a unfortunately very common and very deadly form of cancer that almost always recurs. So even after a patient receives surgery and radiation therapy, the tumor is very likely to recur in the same location. At that point, the patients have received a significant dose to their brain, especially the brain stem, and any further dose would potentially paralyze or kill them. Our collaborator at UCLA was able to treat some of these patients who would normally have only had a 6-month expected survival. Many of these patients, after 2 years, are still alive. One patient in particular that really affected me was somebody who had been able to live long enough to see one of his children be born before dying.
Looking into the future now, where do you see radiobeam headed in terms of development and integration of the particle accelerator technology in the medical field within the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, David, accelerators are my passion, and I hope to always be working on accelerators for some new application. There's always been new things that have come up over the past 50 years that accelerators have found some application in. I believe that there will continue to be new medical applications for accelerators in the future, and there will always be a need for somebody that has some company that has the expertise in developing new accelerators and innovative technologies to help further those applications. We'll be looking at particle therapy. So by particle therapy, we would mean specifically using light ions or even heavy ions such as carbon in order to do treatments. Right now, the machines that do that are very expensive, and there's some opportunities to make less expensive accelerators for those applications as well.
Can you share with us what other technologies are there in the pipeline that would potentially positively affect your company?
Sure. We are also working on novel X-ray sources that can be used for imaging. There is a new technique called inverse confidence scattering that where we bounce a laser beam off an electron beam to produce very bright X-rays. And these X-rays can be used for creating very precise images using different imaging techniques, such as phase contrast imaging, that have greater contrast with soft tissues.
That's remarkable. Thank you, Salem. Moving now to the work that we're doing with you in the DOE, Department of Energy Commercialization Assistance Program. I know that you've been working with one of our network resources, Barada Fatuhi, and I wanted to check with you on how the work with Farada would have an impact on your own aims to sell more product, be less reliant on SBIR grants, you know, any help that you're getting on marketing, branding, etc.
Sure, Rohit. Well, you can imagine as a small business owner with a lot of different technical projects going on, we oftentimes don't have enough time to do some of the more business development and marketing work that really should be done by any company. So over the past several years, we've sort of neglected our website, and it really doesn't provide an accurate reflection of who we are today. Our website was originally intended to provide people with a picture of our products, what types of things we make. But I think there's something much more important about our company that wasn't really captured. It's really our capabilities, our passion for accelerators, our extensive research capabilities and facilities. We have our own machine shop, we have our own bunkers for radiation testing. And apart from that, I think we're just very pleasant people to work with in research collaborations. So we would like our new website to highlight that, to give a little bit more personal feeling about who we are and what it's like to work with us beyond just the simple products that we make.
Thank you, Salem. So I think in closing, we want to find out where we can direct people to your company, website, social media. Can you share with us that information?
Sure. Well, our new website is not up yet, but you can find our old one at www.radiobeam.com. You can also email me. My email address is Boucher, B-O-U-C-H-E-R, at radiobeam.com.
Salem, on behalf of LARDA, this is David Barakoff. We really thank you for the time that you spent on the podcast with us and describing the convergence of how particle accelerators can be applied to other fields such as the medical sector. And we look forward to continue working with you on your website and your branding of your company, and wish you all the success in the marketplace. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, David. It was great to talk to you, and thank you to LARDA and the Department of Energy for providing us this support.
We're moving into the next section of our podcast, where we will be joined by Karen Sorber, the CEO of Micronic Technologies, and she'll be sharing with us her insights and innovation at the confluence of LARDA's mission of feed and fuel, so the intersection of agriculture and energy. Micronic Technologies is a LARDA alumni company from several of our commercialization assistance programs and also a presenter at the 2015 Ag Innovation Showcase.
Karen founded Micronic Technologies in 2008 with her husband, an inventor with 22 patents in his storied history. Karen herself spent 35 years in the DC area in various executive positions before she and her husband decided to make a difference. Their new technology attempts to mitigate the diminishing availability of the world's freshwater resources.
Once again, I'm Claire Kinlaw. I'm joined by Rohit Shukla and my colleague David Barakoff from LARDA.
And hello, I'm David Barakoff. And Micronic Technologies is a perfect example of how energy and clean water sectors directly intersect.
So, Karen, you know, for all our listeners and for those people interested in this very specific important issue of water that is used for food, water that is used for habitation, there is an origin story here that will enable us to understand why and how you did what you did. What is that origin story? How did your company get its start?
Well, thank you for having me, Rohit, and I'd be happy to share my story. I was in Peru in 2007 as part of a humanitarian visit, and I learned firsthand just how devastating the poverty is in that country in areas where they do not have access to fresh water. there I was, a privileged American, and I'm interacting with these people that have no fresh water. This hit me, and I said, I got to do something about this. And I didn't know what it was going to be. And then I met and married my now husband of almost 10 years. We decided to take on this idea to create a desalination technology. The technology is the same, but what we've learned over the years is that it's best to go after the very, very highly concentrated contaminated water than just plain old desalination, because that's practically, you know, universally cleaned through reverse osmosis and distillation systems. In our case, over the years, we've developed this technology that can clean very dirty water, very, very high concentrations of salt, nitrate, phosphorus, lead even. We can do nano waste. We've been able to remove pharmaceuticals from the water. Not only can we remove those elements from the water at very, very high rates of success, we also have a very high throughput, which means if you put 100 gallons into the system, you'd get 95 to 98 gallons out clean. 2 to 3 gallons may be a waste. My husband and I have now developed this technology, and we're going to market in the next couple of years. And then as I progress, I want to establish licensing agreements with non-governmental organizations, NGOs, and the like throughout impoverished nations to enable them to have access to this new revolutionary technology.
So Karen, could you expand some of the many markets, the many applications where you see this very powerful water purification technology being applied? So can you share what you're going to go after?
In the beginning, we thought it was going to be desalination, which is taking ocean water and cleaning it. The issue there is it's very, very high volume, and right now we're at small scale. When you desalinate water, typically there's a very strong brine at the end of it, and it only is maybe 40, 50% efficient in terms of its throughput. So we can take and we can clean that reject that may be very concentrated and too much for the reverse osmosis systems to handle. We can take that and reduce it to a very, very small amount of brine for easy, economical, and more sustainable disposal. So that's one market, the back end of reverse osmosis. Additionally, we have a great deal of interest from the agricultural markets, and that's because we can treat and clean nitrate-driven waters that are a result of runoff from stormwater and over-fertilization. Now, we can remove 97 to 99% of the nitrates out of the water. So it is a solution. I worked with LARDA over a couple of year period on the agricultural market. We had received several grants from USDA and went through their program, which was excellent. We learned that the agricultural market may be a little bit further down for us because it's so huge. And a lot of the applications are not necessarily point source. And we need to be able to treat something at its point. So we've evolved it, and we've learned that because, for example, nano waste and nanotechnologies are the future. And they have a very expensive way in which to filter out the waste. And ours can do it quickly and cheaply. So in addition to nano, we also have the opportunity for pharmaceuticals. And again, we got, in that case, 100% of the pharmaceuticals out of the wastewater that came out of a couple of different plants. Another is lead. I'm hoping to deploy an emergency vehicle where if we had a temporary emergency system that could go out in the case of something that did happen in Flint, we could have gone out in an emergency case and helped out. We are a transportable, portable system. We can go to the source, clean the water, and the wastewater can be easily disposed of, and the product water is essentially drinkable. EPA has agreed in principle and in handshake, and we're in the process now of developing a statement of work where we will take our next pilot to the National Test and Evaluation Facility in Cincinnati, and Dr. Lee Vane is going to lead the testing program for us for the purposes of EPA. They're interested in brine concentration because of the the problems that are occurring in inland in the United States with salted water. So both around the ocean, we have plenty of desalinations required in brine concentration, and then inland as well, coming up from the groundwaters. So he's very interested in studying this for brine management. In the short term, we're going after the markets that require a very heavily contaminated water at small scale down to a very small amount of brine or virtually nothing. We're designing a system now that we hope to get to zero liquid discharge. And then over time, as the company grows, as the technology scales, we'll reach out to larger markets, including agriculture and others that are at larger scale.
I was wondering if you could just take a minute and describe how this innovative technology works and how it compares to other products in the marketplace who are tackling these important challenges with our fresh water supplies.
I think there's one point I'd like to make as you all have spoken about the energy and water connection. Water, to clean water takes a lot of energy, and to produce energy takes a lot of water. They are inextricably intertwined, sort of a symbiotic relationship. And in a way, if you try to fix the water problem without also looking at the impact on energy, you could suboptimize our resources. So I really applaud your efforts to try to integrate the thinking around this Venn diagram, if you will, of, you know, feeding the world, powering the earth, cleaning the water. As you speak about the energy impact, our system is not a traditional water treatment system in any way. It uses the dynamics and the scientific principles of a tornado to actually evaporate the water. We have a very specialized patented pod that is formed with a very unique geometry that enables the tornado to be formed. At that point, it instantaneously evaporates the water. So it's evaporating the water, and that vapor goes through the system. It, through heat exchangers and condensation, it comes back out in clean water. That small amount of brine that comes out helps the client reuse the clean water immediately, and that small amount of brine is more efficient to dispose of. Now, we're doing this under low pressure and low temperature compared to evaporation that's done traditionally with boiling water. And the advantage to us compared to evaporators is that because it's a dynamic flow, it doesn't have the time or the environment to grow on the sides of the inside of the machine. So it's a continuous process, cleaning water, producing a small amount of brine, and comparing our technology from a cost standpoint, we estimate that it could be as much as 65% cheaper than traditional evaporation. And many companies don't even approach cleaning their water at further reduction because it's so costly. Ours is going to be much cheaper. What that means for the earth is that the 69% of industrial wastewater that does not get reused will be enabled to be reused, and we have less impact on the earth.
I would like to turn our attention on this discussion to the LARDA mentors, and specifically, can you provide some insights in how LARDA has assisted you to overcome some of the challenges that were particularly difficult for you?
I've been through several accelerators, and they were more like classroom environment, and you would sit and listen to them. What LARDA does is provide you high quality domain expertise to provide specific guidance on where you are in your commercialization and what are the next steps of refinement that you need to work on in order to get over that hump you're at. Starting from Bob Calcaterra, I mean, he's an angel investor and belongs to an angel group, and he gave me a lot of guidance on how to deal with angels. Bob Morris, he advised me on how to bring my PowerPoint that I provide to investors into a whole nother level of a story and knit together the information and the analysis that can support an investor making a yes decision. Claire, I remember several times that she has interviewed me over the years. I think she's done some articles, and it's been wonderful because it gives us validation. So since 2015, LARDA has continued to follow us and give us opportunities for, you know, being in the marketplace, showing up for events, and being talked about, and that matters to us. And they've done more due diligence on us than any other organization over the years. And then we get to Rohit. I mean, my goodness, I can't even imagine someone who has been more committed to helping me consistently year in, year out. One of the things, when you learn a lot from an accelerator and you create these relationships with those people, and then they really do stay in touch and they really do want to continue to help you years later in wherever space you are, I mean, that really goes to the character and the fabric of the design of what LARDA is doing. I hope that that program continues and that others get the benefits that I've received.
How do people find you? I mean, I know they can type in Micronic Technologies. Is that the best way of visiting your website?
The quickest way to get the rundown on us is our website, MicronicTechnologies.com. We have a Twitter account, @MicronicTech. Searching me helps. We have a Twitter account for me, which is @KSorber, and I am also on LinkedIn. But our website, it has studies on there and news flashes and the like. And, of course, you can just call me, too. My number's all over the place.
You are going to make a difference, and we really appreciate you being there as a presence, as a force, as an energy, you know, both for the company and for the area you're in and for this general area of work. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
I am very happy to have participated. And Rohit, let me know if there's anything else I can do for you and LARDA along the way.
We are fortunate to live in these times where scientific knowledge is increasingly converging and coalescing around remarkable solutions drawn from various disciplines. Today, we delved into some of those solutions that elaborate on those convergent technology areas. Thank you again, Ed, Salem, and Karen, for your dedication and your spirit of entrepreneurship. And thank you to our directors. I'm Rohit Shukla. Thank you for listening to Ideas Energized.